What's up, Yap Squad, and welcome back to another episode of Yap Sesh Podcast. If you are new here, my name is Brooke, and I am with my co-host Sawyer, and we are Yap Sesh, a fangirl podcast where we discuss all things fandom and nerdy and hope to share the experiences of women and queer fans everywhere. You can find us on Spotify and on YouTube. Please make sure to subscribe and follow and like and do all of those things so you never miss an episode. How's it going this morning?
I am alive, which is good. No, it's okay. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm really excited about our episode today. We have an awesome guest. And before we get into that, we've got some little announcements, some housekeeping things. So hopefully by the time this episode goes up, we will also be on Apple Podcasts. Very excited to add another platform to have people listen to, because I know a lot of people have mentioned that they listen to Apple Podcasts and Pocket Casts, which I don't really understand Pocket Casts, but once we get on Apple Podcasts, I think I can like connect it to our Pocket Cast thing. I don't know how that works, but hopefully it'll be good. But if you can check us out on Apple Podcasts and download our episodes and give us a nice, preferably 5-star rating, that would be super cool. On Spotify too, if you could rate us on Spotify, preferably 5 stars. If you're listening to this and you think that we're not 5-star worthy, maybe just go leave, because I don't want a bad rating. I want the good ratings. I'm just keeping it real. But we've got some other announcements. We are contemplating on whether or not we want to do some Yap Sesh merch, which will not be like our logo and like, well, we do have a cool mug that I designed, that if anyone wants a mug, I can put that up. But I made some like cute designs that are about like being a fanfic girly and being like a certified yapper. And I'm just toying with those designs, and
they're very cute. And yeah, I think that people would be very interested. Like, you guys haven't seen them yet, but I'm promising you, this is like very, very cute stuff. So
yeah, I always like, I feel weird when I see influencers release merch and it's just like their logo of their channel. And I mean, it's fine if you really like that person and you really want to support them, but I would not buy those things. So I don't want to make those things, you know, if that makes sense. I'd rather make some cute things that people can wear. And then we have hopefully another segment or another episode type coming. We had a super cool brain blast. House of the Dragon season 2 just ended, and Sawyer mentioned that her boyfriend really loves Game of Thrones, so they're going to start watching it together. And my boyfriend and I really love Game of Thrones, and after we finished season 2, we were like, fuck, I want to do a Game of Thrones rewatch. So we're gonna weaponize this a little bit, and we're gonna make a Yap Sesh date night where, after hopefully every season of Game of Thrones, we'll do a little episode where all four of us get together and talk about it.
Yeah, I think there's like a little bit of a dry spell with new content coming out, so we won't have any re-yaps coming up probably until December with Skeleton Crew. So I think this will be a fun addition to the pod, and I'm looking forward to it. And I'm a little scared because I've never seen Game of Thrones. I think my only exposure to Game of Thrones was like one time when I was probably 12, I was friends with this girl who was not being supervised at all. And she turned on an episode, and I think that probably was the first time that I ever saw a penis. And I was like, whoa, okay.
That is so quite alarming.
Yes. But yeah, I'm excited. I think it's going to be super fun to get the men involved for a change.
They both agreed to it, so yes. I'm gonna hold that as a binding contract for my chronically offline partner boyfriend. He hates, you know, he supports me, but he just texted me. I thought he heard me talking about him. He just asked me if I wanted food. Anyway, okay, I have one more section. I have one more thing that I want to talk about in our intro, but I think our guest would also really love to talk about this with us. So I'm going to bring them in, and we're going to start, and then we're going to talk about our whole episode and all that stuff. Anyway, yeah. Hello.
Hello.
So we are with our friend Megs, who is super awesome. But Megs, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your stuff, your things, where you are.
Yes. So I am a fan, content creator, whatever you want to call me. I just post on the internet and I post all my thoughts. I am mostly on Twitter, dabbling in the world of TikTok and stuff. I used to stream on Twitch, so that was kind of my niche for a long time. Big fangirl, huge fangirl, actually. My whole wall is covered in art. I love everything fandom. And so, yeah. Oh, I use they, them pronouns also. And I'm so excited to be here. I'm so happy.
I'm so excited because we just were interviewed by Megs for their blog talking about Yapsesh and all of the fandom things. And we were like, this was great. Would you like to be our next guest on our episode?
And I said, absolutely.
Because what is having cool friends if not making them be guests on our podcast?
I feel like it's like a requirement if you become friends with you guys that like you have to be on the podcast at some point, you know?
But anyway, okay, so I wanted to bring Megs in early because I don't remember if it was last week or the week before, but user Center of These Lights on Twitter, I don't know if they created these statistics themselves or exported them somewhere, but they posted the AO3 top 100 ship stats from August 2023 to July 2024. And I have the list of the top 10 and then a couple other like highlights and things that I wanted to talk about because I'm a big fanfic girly. I think y'all are big fanfic girlies.
Absolutely.
So I don't understand. Is this the way that you listed it in the outline? Is that 1 to 10 or is it 10
yes.
to 1?
Yes. So the top ship on AO3 from August 2023 to July 2024 is Aziraphale and Crowley from Good Omens.
That's I think wild. That's fair.
It's very fair.
I mean, I don't know.
It was
if
very
they have,
popular.
Like, you know, I've never seen Good Omens, but I've never seen any like major discourse around the ship. So,
yeah, I feel like everyone's pretty like this. I think it's almost canon. I have not seen the show, but I see the fandom all the time on my stuff.
I believe it is as of season 2.
Yeah, I think it's like pretty much canon. So it makes sense that that would be.
Yes. I feel like if you love Good Omens, you love Good Omens. It's not just like a casual enjoyment thing. Some interesting things on this list. 3 out of the top 10 are Harry Potter ships in the year of our Lord 2024. In the second spot, we have Sirius Black and Remus Lupin. And then later down the line, we have Regulus Black and James Potter. Fucking Marauders, get the fuck out of here. And then we have Draco Malfoy and Harry Potter.
Stop.
We are Harry Potter haters in this house. I used to love it, but I just cannot. I cannot even count. Oh, well, you can separate the art from the artist. I can't.
It's not possible.
No.
That's just so funny. I wonder if it's because like there already is such a high volume anyway, and people possibly updating those or like looking them up. Because I wonder like what this is gauged on like clicks, or is it gauged on how many are made?
So I will say I don't know if it's what data. I'm assuming it is only the fix that have been posted between August 2023 and July 2024, but they also had on the list if the ships went up or down on the list, and they also listed if the ships were new. So like the fourth ship on this list was Astarion and Tav from Baldur's Gate 3, which was new to the list because the game came out in August of 2023. Okay. So that's not surprising.
Yeah, I think that like, if we're doing sheer volume of fix, Raylo would definitely be on the list just because I think it's in the top 5 of, like, number of fan fictions that are on AO3 ship-wise.
Yeah. And I will admit, I was a big Harry Potter kid growing up. I read all of the books.
So was I.
I went to the midnight premieres of all of the Deathly Hallows and all the movies. Like, I am not saying I am holier than thou because I don't like Harry Potter anymore. I did, 100%. But because of the people in my life that are trans or a part of the LGBTQ+ community, it just does not feel right. It does not sit right in my heart to enjoy it anymore.
100%.
But enough of that. there are some anime things on this list. Some from Jujutsu Kaisen. People are gonna come for me in the comments and be like, "Girl, what the fuck are you pronouncing?" I don't watch anime. I've tried. I tried watching Naruto, and I'm sorry. I know that there is probably an anime out there for me. I did very much enjoy Rurouni Kenshin. I watched the first, season of the show, and I watched all the live action movies, which are low key fire. They're really good, but I don't want to get into another franchise or another thing.
No, my brother is really into anime. I'm very much like I watched all of Attack on Titan, and then I watched like parts of My Hero. I'm like very casual with that because I'm like, if I go full blown, I don't have time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I've had really terrible exposure to anime. Like, I watched the first season of JoJo, which is definitely an acquired taste. And the dog dies, and the dog dies horribly, and nobody warned me about that, and I was like, what the fuck?
That's crazy. There's a couple that aren't surprising to me that are on here. 911 has taken the internet by storm, I feel like, this year. Oh, yeah. And so Buck and Eddie from that show, I stopped watching 911, but the confirmation of bisexual Buck is like, It makes me want to start watching it again because I love that.
I agree.
And then we've got Steve Harrington and Eddie Munson. Not surprised.
Yeah.
And there's Red, White, and Royal Blue. Isn't that like horribly right-wing propaganda TV show Hallmark fucking movie?
Yeah, it's the movie on Amazon Prime. Okay. I read the book. And I watched the movie because I was curious because I had heard all these things about it. And I was like, okay, I'll bite. I'll do it. I'll take one for the team. And the book was not my favorite just because, like, I am ace. So it was a lot of, like, steamy, but, like, not in a good way. Because I can do steamy. I love steamy books. But it was, like, not in a good way. And I was like, okay, I feel just like I'm intruding on something that I should not be intruding on the entire time I read it. Uh-huh. And then, yeah, it's just, like, one of those movies that you're like, okay, why? Like, you know, why are we here?
I know I am a little bit surprised that it's in the top 10 because I feel like...
It took the internet by storm.
Yeah, I guess it blew up. It just doesn't seem like a thing that like the AO3 girlies would.
To me, it hit that kind of niche of like the mainstream, you know, like those straight people that are like obsessed with gay people. It hit them.
Yeah, I was going to say this entire list is, I think, MLM. Totally is the whole list.
That's
which
crazy.
Is something we've talked about on the show before. Like, you know, people are that's not new. Like the first fan fictions were Kirk and Spock.
So the one thing I wanted to highlight, I guess, is that there is not a single Star Wars ship in the top 100. That's not crazy. A single Star Wars ship on the list. My little anecdote on the outline that I wrote for this episode, though, is Oshamir, though.
Oshamir was too late to the game.
Yeah,
Could probably have an entry next year for sure.
Oh yeah,
because we're already at like 350 posted fan fictions, and it's been like not even a month. So, that is unfortunate, but you know, I could
It'll get
there. I would say they definitely have a shot for next year. And if there is an announcement of a season two at Celebration next year, they're going to be following year as well.
100%.
Absolutely. Because if there's one thing that the Raylo girlies do, it is make their fucking art. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. whether you like it or not, a lot of Oshamirs are also Raylo girlies. So,
amen.
Period. But anyway, okay, cool. So we've got I always ask our guests a couple of like little introductory questions, and then we are gonna move on to our topic, which I'm very excited about, is TTRPGs.
Yay!
Like Dungeons and Dragons, but also there are many others.
So many
that we can talk about. But we are fangirls in this house, like we've mentioned many times. So, Megs, I wanted to know what your first fandom you remember being a part of, either something you were a fan of, and then maybe like the first fandom that you were a part of the community or like online spaces. And mm-hmm. then what is your favorite fandom, if you can pick one?
I think so. The first thing that I ever was like fully into as a kid was, surprisingly enough, Star Trek. My mom loved Star Trek. We watched a lot of it. And then Firefly was like the next one that I got super into, which I have posters of behind me. R.I.P. Firefly, it only got one season, but it was the best season ever. And then I got a movie. So,
a very like significant season. Everybody who loves sci-fi knows Firefly.
It's phenomenal. I highly recommend it if you have not seen it. I think the first one that I like got involved in community wise was definitely the Doctor Who fandom. I was in the trenches on Tumblr. I was 13 years old. Like, my wall in my childhood bedroom, I painted a TARDIS. I met Alex Kingston when I was 13, and I sobbed my eyes out afterwards because she was like one of the first celebrities I ever met. And I was so excited. I was like freaking out. So definitely Doctor Who would be the first one that I got like actually involved in. My favorite one? Ooh. This could be cliche, but I think the Star Wars fandom has honestly been my favorite to be involved with, because I've gotten a lot more involved in the last like 6 months. I've always been a Star Wars fan, but I think the last 6 months I've gotten like more connected into like the actual community itself. And I think that that's been so much fun. I've met so many cool people, and like a lot of my online friends that I knew before I even joined this space are also huge Star Wars fans. So getting to share that with them has been really cool. And I don't know, I feel like it's been a lot of fun to like ingrain myself into the community more. So I think that that's probably my favorite.
Yeah,
we love Star Wars.
I would
agree.
And I would say that this is the best like time to be a Star Wars fan in a while. You know, like I've said it a few times recently, but you know, someone, I think it was in hindsight, it was probably a rage bait tweet, but somebody was like, the Star Wars fandom seems so dead right now. And I was like, where have you been? Because I think the Star Wars fandom is more active right now than it has been in a while.
100%.
It's been so fun to be a participant in that. And but anyway, switching gears, I love that Brooke put this question in the outline, because I too have been wanting to know how you got into photography. Because if, for those of you who are not familiar with Megs yet, when you eventually go to their socials, you will discover that they are one of the most incredible photographers that I have ever had the pleasure of knowing. So would you like to talk about that for a minute? Because I would love to know.
So I grew up in theater, and I was actually a theater major for a couple of years before I switched into social media. And so I've always loved creating things. I've always loved making videos and stuff like that. But I got into photography. I've always been the friend that like took all the photos and took all the pictures and stuff. I would borrow my mom's camera and like take it with me places. But it wasn't until I moved out here to Florida when I did my college program. I had a friend in my college program who had just like a basic DSLR, and I was like, can I borrow it and just like take pictures and see what I get? And she was like, yeah, absolutely. I borrowed it for like 2 weeks. That's actually how I met Maggie and all them, was I was borrowing my friend's camera, and was taking pictures of like the parks, and I was doing mostly scenic photography. I wasn't really photographing people. And I just feel like pictures can, like people say pictures can tell you a million stories and say a thousand words. And I feel like being able to capture just like candid moments is like one of my favorite things in the whole world. Whether that's video or photography, I love both pretty much equally. And so I met them, started taking photos. And then last year I got my own camera. And I was like, okay, I'm going to like actually use this thing, 'cause I paid for it. I paid a lot of money for this camera, so I'm going to use it. And I feel like I have used it very well. And I just love being able to capture other people's hard work as well. Like, that's why I've loved taking all the cosplay photos. Cosplay takes so much time and so much energy, and I feel like everyone deserves to have beautiful pictures of their work and their hard work and dedication to that as well. And so that's another reason why I started dabbling more into that side of things. And so, yeah, I've always loved photography since I was younger. Like, if you look at my Google photos, I have a million photos from high school and college. I've taken so many just on my phone or on other people's cameras. And so it's always been a big part of my life. But I think the more like professional stuff came when I was like, okay, I want to start like capturing other people's moments and all of that. I think it's fun.
It's so nice to have a friend that is like, we'll capture the candid things. And because I feel like sometimes you hang out with friends and it's like kind of like pulling teeth to be like, couldn't you take a picture of me? Like, sorry to bother you.
I, as much as I love like post photos, I think candid photos are so much more fun. Like, I love documentary style photography. That's kind of my favorite style. I don't do it as much because it, like, I don't bring my camera around as much right now, especially because it monsoons like every day here in Florida. But I love getting photos of just like the random candid moments, because those are the ones that everyone's like, oh my god, I didn't know you took a picture of that. And like, you know, those are like my favorite things in the whole world. So I will always bring my camera if I can, because I'm like, I just want to get cute little photos of my friends being silly. That's my favorite.
So I think it's time to move into our, I don't know where that accent came from. My like vocal stem is like switching from like a Southern to like a really bad British accent lately.
It's okay.
It's kind of nice, actually. Nice transition. It helps me practice my little voices when I play a TTRPG. Crazy.
I did. Because the sound bite from, oh wait, Megs, have you seen Deadpool and Wolverine?
Yes.
Okay. The sound bite of Gambit.
Ooh, I make a name for myself out here.
Ooh, I'm gonna make a name for myself out here. I did that for Bill. I just said that. And Billy was like flipping out because he was like, that was so scary accurate. Where the fuck did that come from?
It's so funny. It's the best.
It's so good. When we watched, already on a tangent, but when we went, so my boyfriend's family, they're like all from Louisiana. And so I guess we should put a spoiler warning, but I guess it's a little too late. anyway, spoilers for Deadpool and Wolverine if you haven't seen it yet. Sorry. Okay,
we didn't say who it was, I don't think. We just did the thing.
Anyway, spoilers for Deadpool and Wolverine. Gambit shows up in the movie, played by Channing Tatum, and he has this like deep Cajun accent. And my boyfriend's family, they're all from Louisiana. And I was very confused at first because I was like, is this man speaking French? Is it intentionally a bad accent? Yeah. And then Brad was like, I realized he was doing Louisiana or Cajun when I started to understand him. And I was like, because I like leaned over and I was like, is he supposed to be like from Louisiana? And Brad was like, yeah. So that was,
I thought it was great. Cajun is a hard accent.
Yeah, no, it actually, it's like, so I've seen hard. A lot of comments from people that are like from Louisiana. And they're like, no, that was actually spot on.
My coworker is from Louisiana as well, and she was like, that was crazy to watch in theaters, because she was like, I did not expect it, because she didn't know anything about Gambit. So she was like, that was not what I expected to come out of his mouth when he started talking.
I honestly, like, I didn't think Channing Tatum was a good actor until that. And then I was like, oh, I'm sorry, sir. I wasn't familiar with your game.
Sorry about that.
And he's wanted to play Gambit forever, so I'm so glad that he has an opportunity. But turn flipping it back, going back. Today we are going to talk about the TTRPG world. So if you don't know what a TTRPG is, it stands for tabletop role playing game. So think your Dungeons and Dragons, your Pathfinder, your Warhammer, I think. Yeah.
There's so many different systems out there. It's crazy.
Star Wars. Anytime,
yeah. Anytime you're out there playing and role playing with your friends and have some kind of mechanical being, that's a tabletop RPG.
Yeah, I think like Dungeons and Dragons is probably the most recognizable of those. But there are so many out there that it's really, I feel like it's had a renaissance. It's always been a thing that people enjoy, but, and we'll talk about it later on because I have a whole section about how it's become more mainstream and popularized by actual plays and things. But I wanted to ask both of you, but especially Megs, what your experience with TTRPGs are. When did you get into them? What was the first one that you played? What's your favorite? All those things.
I'll go first. So I got into TTRPGs through D&D. My sister actually played a lot of D&D, and they had gotten into watching actual plays. And so I got into it in high school, right when Critical Role kind of started, because that was when my sister was like, hey, you should watch this. I think you'd really like it. And I was like that annoying teenager that was like, no, I'm too cool for that. And then I watched it with, like, they had it all on the TV, and I, like, sat down in the living room, and I watched it with the whole thing with them, and I was like, oh, I do really like this. And so got into it there, and then my friends, a bunch of my friends in my friend group had heard about D&D and had always wanted to try it, and so I jokingly was like, what if I ran a, like, little game? I had no clue what I was doing. I was like, what if I ran a little game? We ended up playing and loved it. And did it at like a summer camp, and we were like, we should keep doing this. And so the rest is history. I've been a huge D&D fan pretty much since like the beginning of high school.
I feel like that's how it goes. Like if you have a group of friends that, especially if you've played before, but you have friends that have not, it's like, guess I'm a DM now.
Literally, like someone just goes, sure. And then it never stops, but it's fun. It's a great time.
Yeah, I've been saying I'm a baby DM because I have my friends from home. I've convinced them to play, and I was like, well, I got a DM because I'm the only one that's played before, and we have not scheduled our first play yet. But my current D&D party that I'm in, we're also switching. Each one of us is going to do a one shot with our party until we decide what like campaign we want to do next, and figure out who what we want to DM for it. So I'm excited.
That's very fun.
Yeah. Sawyer, I know you don't have as much experience with TTRPG stuff, but I know you've played a little bit and you've got a lot of RP experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I mean, for a long time I was like adverse to it because I thought I wouldn't be good at it. And we'll talk about OCs more later on, but like, so I've always had a hard time with making OCs because my main exposure to roleplay was like online Omegle or chat rooms or, you know, Instagram, Tumblr, RP, whatever. And I've always been very much like interested in continuing the stories of characters that already exist. So that's my preferred method of roleplay. A couple years ago, I was invited to do a Star Wars 5e campaign that was streaming, and I had a really cool idea for my character, and I won't even lie to you, the character was just my Reylo baby, but like, that's fine. Period. Because that's really, yeah, we'll talk about it later, but we had this, the DM and I had this whole plan for her to become the like big bad of the story eventually. And then one day I saw that he deleted almost all of his social media, and he made this post, and he was like, people are brainwashed. You need to get offline and go outside. And then he just disappeared off the face of the earth.
Wow.
Insane.
And that was the end of that. but I have dice. I'm ready now. I decided that it was kind of like, I'm really good at voices. I do a lot of voices. And I had a chance to be a NPC who did not live very long in Brooke's campaign. and the only reason he didn't live very long is because I decided to do my Mickey Mouse impression, and immediately the entire campaign was like, we cannot handle this for
no that Ricky long. The Rat.
So I can't remember who killed me. I think it was Remy. I think Remy killed me, mm-hmm. and because she rolled a 17, and Mitchard Mouse was dead. But now I have I'm ready to. I realize that if I'm like with like close friends that I'm really comfortable with, I think I would have a really great time playing it. So I want to do a campaign. I'm ready. I'm ready to get into it.
Hell yeah.
Come on in.
Yap/D&D coming to a YouTube channel near you. But honestly, yeah. I'm like, we were talking about that idea and I really want to do it.
It's gonna happen for sure.
Absolutely.
Yes. I actually played my first TTRPG was a one-shot Star Wars. We used, I think it was the Fantasy Flight system, which I'm still very confused by. I have played it multiple times now and I don't understand. I just hold the dice up and I say, what does this mean? but it was really, really fun. It was just a one shot. It was probably like 4 hours long. And I didn't realize I'm someone who is, I'm very similar. I'm pretty much the same person in person as I am online. But when I'm around people that I am not as comfortable with or as familiar with, I'm a little more reserved. So I think the first time that I played, I didn't know how to play. I have never really done role play stuff before. So it went well. I think I was proud of how it went with what I was able to do. And then I had a bunch of friends and we all wanted to play D&D, so we started a campaign together with our party, and we have been playing together for 2 years now, which is cool. Oh. We are getting an Airbnb in over Labor Day weekend, and we're gonna play D&D all weekend and go to the Ren Fair and dress as our characters. So I'm super excited about that. It's gonna be really fun. And I am also, because I will plug it, I have been a part of my friend Alan, who is the owner of Level Up Sabers. On his YouTube channel, he has gotten a couple content creators together, including myself, where we do Star Wars. We've not been using the Fantasy Flight or 5e. I literally can't remember the name of the system that we used in our first campaign, but it was like a universal TTRPG system that you could like apply to any kind of universe. And then now we are playing, and that was High Republic, so that was cool. And now we're playing in a Empire Age, using the Scum and Villainy system.
Fun.
Which is really fun. So that one is going to start being uploaded to YouTube because we've recorded like almost the entire season, but it's been really fun. And I like the difference of doing like a D&D kind of RP versus a Star Wars RP. And, you know, I think in both you just make shit up. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, absolutely, follow the canon rules, but it's definitely an interesting experience.
Love.
Yeah.
I love
D&D. If you had to explain a TTRPG to a beginner or someone who is like, the only thing I know about Dungeons & Dragons is that like nerdy people play it and I don't understand anything about it. How would you describe it to someone?
Ooh. If it was someone that like had no idea, had never been exposed to it at all, I would probably say it involves a lot of math. You create a character with a set of stats that are like your health and all of your things. And then you have someone called a game master or dungeon master, however they want to prescribe themselves. Some people like it either way. That essentially builds the world around you. So think of it like a video game, but instead of virtually, someone is in front of you telling you exactly what the video game looks like and all the options that you have. And the sky's the limit. You don't have to just do what's in front of you. If your DM describes something for you and you don't want to do that and you want to go explore another part of the map, you absolutely can. There's really no rails. It's all the power of your imagination. And so, and the dice tell you what to do. So that's the part of the game and the chance is that the dice are going to tell you if you unlock that door or not and whether or not you're going to have to find another avenue. And so a lot of problem solving, a lot of working together, and a lot of fun story, I think, is the best way to describe it.
And I think that they, like, from my, I'm obviously speaking from a lack of experience, but I also think that I've had to explain roleplay itself to people a lot of the time, because when people hear roleplay, they immediately think that you're talking about, like, weird stuff you do with your partner. And if that's your shtick, cool. That's awesome. That's not what I mean when I say roleplay. But still people, you know, are suspicious when they say, oh, you know, like, what do you mean? I always explain just the concept of roleplay to people as, like, you're writing a fan fiction with other people. Mm-hmm. It's like a collaborative fan fiction. And I think that element does play into D&D as well, because 100%. You have the DM who is doing the world building, but then your team that you're playing with, you know, they're going to make decisions that influence how your character is going to act and whatnot. So it's like, yeah, you're writing a story together. And that is why people get so attached to their characters and so attached to the world that's created, and why these stories can go on for years and years and years. Because especially if you play for that long with the same group of people, the character becomes an extension of yourself. So, yeah.
No, yeah, it really is all of those things. And I think before I kind of knew anything about it, it seemed like something very intimidating, because I was like, I wasn't thinking about the role play aspect of it. I was just thinking about, like, these books that I'm seeing that, like, the players and the DMs use are giant. How am I supposed mm-hmm. to read the whole thing and understand all the rules? And in reality, you don't have to know anything. No. It's so much. I was not a theater kid, but I was theater kid adjacent. And so I took a couple theater classes in high school. So, and I loved going to the improv shows at my college. So I knew a lot of, like, improv things. And I was like, this is just all fucking a yes and game, essentially.
100%. I think that's another thing that people get so caught up in, is they're like, oh my God, there's so, like, for every system, there's all these rules and things that you have to know. And they're like, oh my God, I'm a DM and I don't even know what the fuck I'm doing half the time. I have to look things up all the time. And I think that that's one of the joys of D&D and TTRPGs in general, is that while there are rules, you do not have to live and die by them. Like, it is totally up to you on whether or not, like, you want to go full gung ho into the rules or not. And then at that point, like, there's this great thing called Google. And because TTRPGs have been around for so long, especially D&D, it's so easy to just type in what you're looking for, and either there's an answer for it on, like, a website, or someone has talked about it on Reddit and can give you an answer of their experience. And it's wonderful. You don't have to know everything. You can literally jump in without knowing a single thing and just be like, we'll figure it out.
I'm like, it always brings me so much joy when I'm watching an actual play, which, for the audience, it is people similarly to how people stream video games, and they have an audience that watch them play said game. There are groups of people that often will stream them playing Dungeons and Dragons or whatever TTRPG it is, and then people can therefore tune in and watch it, which I love. I've gotten really into this year, especially. But I love when I see the GM pull the rule book out because they're not sure about something. And I'm like, this is someone who's been playing for I don't know how long. And they still have to look up rules. And I'm like, cool, I'm good then. because I don't know everything.
Exactly.
Yeah. Megs, do you have a favorite system that you have ever played?
I'm biased to D&D 5e just because I've played that the most, and I'm the most comfortable there.
Yeah.
I have dabbled a little bit into Pathfinder, which I really enjoy. It's a lot of fun. Like, the differences are fun, and I think create a lot of fun opportunities. I want to get into more, like, there was a system they used on Dimension 20 that I was like, that sounds like so much fun, and I can't remember. It was for the Mentopolis season, and it looked like a blast, and I was like, that looks like so much fun. I wanted to do that. So I want to start getting into more of, like, the ones that are not necessarily D&D adjacent, because there are, like, the ones that are very similar to D&D, and then there are ones that are, like, way more out there, and I think I want to start getting into more of those, because those look like, I watch a lot of them, I'm like, this looks like a blast. And then Critical Role has released their beta for Daggerheart, and I've played Candela as well, and I really like both of those. But 5e will always be right here in my little pocket. I keep it there.
Yeah, I feel like I feel similarly. I feel the most comfortable in playing D&D because I've, especially watching actual plays, I have, and playing Baldur's Gate 3, honestly, I have come to, understand the rules so much more. And I know Baldur's Gate is not a one-to-one with the 5e rules, but there are so many spells and actions and things that I didn't know what they did, so I never used them. And then I did a playthrough of Baldur's Gate as one of my OCs, who's a paladin, and I learned so much about what paladins can do, and it's amazing.
Paladins can do so much cool stuff.
Honestly,
I have to...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I have to say that part of the reason that I've, entered this phase of, I really want to actually... First of all, I feel like I have a little bit of FOMO when all my friends are a part of campaigns and I'm not there. But I just wasn't ready, and that's okay. But yeah, so I would like to be a part of a campaign someday, but I think that something that helped me come to I think it was confidence that I was lacking in being ready to do it. But one thing that really helped me was playing games like SWTOR and Fallout and situations like, I'm very much, if I play The Legend of Zelda, I'm going to keep Link's name as Link. If the character has a name that's canon, I'm going to keep the name. Same with KOTOR or anything like that. Okay, that's Mitra. Okay, that's Revan, whatever. But in Fallout and in Baldur's Gate, which I haven't played, but I really want to, it's all on you, babe. You got to do it yourself. So I think Fallout especially, I played 2 Fallout games this year, and I'm like, okay, I can. I'm getting used to the whole creating a character thing, making choices.
Yeah, I think open world games have really helped that as well. I would agree, because I played a lot of open world games, and I think that really helped me get into D&D, like you said, being able to create your own character. And then with open world, there's so many opportunities for choices. And now, especially, there's so many games that your choices affect how your game goes. Mm-hmm. Not just Baldur's Gate, but even in Fallout, the faction that you pick can change your ending. There's so many different games that are taking that opportunity of open world and going, what would happen if your decisions determined how your game went? And I think that is also helping make people more comfortable with the idea of D&D, and that they have the opportunity to play a game that's a little bit more constricted in terms of all the options, and then makes people go, oh wait, this is actually really fun to have that happen. Maybe I can do this. And so I think it's cool that led you to there, Sawyer, and helped you get comfortable, because everyone should play D&D and TTRPGs.
Yeah, I feel very similar. I am usually someone who likes story-driven games where there's a point A and a point B and it tells me where to go. As far as to where I don't even change Cal's outfit when I play Jedi Fallen Order or Survivor. I'm like, no, he's got to stay in his canon look. I will make an exception for flowy long hair Cal, because that is the canon Jedi Survivor Cal to me. But I am very much I like the canon stuff. I've always been that way too, though. Like when I read fan fiction, if I don't really read ship fan fiction, it's usually just self insert or OC or reader. Because that doesn't bother me as much, because I'm like, oh, this is like a little imaginary world where I put myself in the thing. But I very much like the canon of things. I'm not like everything has to be canon all the time type of person, but so I was never really into open world games. I think Baldur's Gate is probably the first open world-ish game, because it still has like a relatively linear storyline, but you get to make so 100%. Many different choices that affect what happens, but you still end up in the same endpoint for the most part. And that had, I think, helped me, like I said, learn how to role play better and play just the rules of the game of D&D a lot easier. And it's made me a little bit more open to playing more open world games. I just get so overwhelmed when I like don't have someone telling me what to do. But I love that we have like this almost unlimited sandbox when you're playing a TTRPG that you can play in and do whatever you want. And I think it's very special, which comes to my next question or like topic that I want to talk about is OCs. Because I love all of my OCs so much.
My little babies.
I think that there would be like a character that I created myself that I would become so invested in and like emotionally attached to. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what our OCs are. Do you remember your first OC? Who's your favorite? If you can pick from your children.
Literally.
And just what your experience is like creating an OC. If you have a method or a process, oh, or if it comes to you in the middle of the night.
I wake up in a cold sweat and go, I'm going to play a tiefling. I think, oh man, my first OC, I don't remember it, but I for sure had like a Doctor Who OC. That was companion. I feel like anyone who was in the fandom at an early young age had like a self-insert companion moment of like, I'm traveling with the Doctor. But the first one that I ever made like for a tabletop was my sister invited me to play like with her and her friends. And I was like, I'm 6 years younger than my sister for reference. So I felt like the coolest little sibling. I was like, oh, you want to invite me? And all your friends are way older than me? Wow. And I played a cleric because I grew up religious. And so I was like, I'm going to play a religious character because this is very familiar to me. I know I can do this well. And I know nothing. I don't remember anything about her. I found my book about her recently and I was like, but she was just the cutest little baby and I love her. So that was like my first in-game one. And then my favorite. That's so hard because I have lots that I haven't even played. I think my favorite was the one that I played the longest. I played a Soul Knife rogue who had been petrified for over 500 years or something crazy. They came back and realized, and they had gone like out of commission in the middle of like a world event that like is known on that continent. It was like a very historical event. They like went out and got petrified during that. And when they came back, found out all their friends were either gone or dead. Because, you know, time passes. And that the same historical event was happening again. So, like, they had like, 400 years of peace. And then the same thing was happening. And so they had to come to terms with all of that. And I loved that character so much. And I would love to go back to playing that character again one day. Because they were so fun. They were very Loki-coded of, like, kind of an anti-hero. In terms of like they were very neutral. They didn't really care about they cared about helping people, but like their drive was more for their friends and like making the world safe for the people that they loved. Mm-hmm. And so I very much enjoyed playing them. That's probably
Like follow the, I guess, alignment chart when you're making a character, or does it like come to you over time?
I think for me, I like to, when I create a character, I usually find art first, which I know is very backwards for most people, but I feel like that helps me kind of gauge where I want to go. And then I like to give myself like, here's my backstory, here's some of my motivations, but I won't necessarily prescribe an alignment until I start playing them. Mm-hmm. Because I like to see the dynamic, and like, I'll have like personality traits and things that, like, they have to have a personality before you start playing. Mm-hmm. And they have to have things that drive them. But I like to wait until I'm in game to be like, okay, this is their main motivation. Here's kind of where they lean alignment wise. And so,
yeah,
a little bit of like a, maybe they're chaotic evil, or not evil. I never go evil. Whoa. But like, maybe they're like a little chaotic neutral, or like, and then mm-hmm. obviously that'll change depending on how the game goes.
Yeah, so for our listeners who might not know what we're talking about, an alignment chart is when you're creating a character, specifically in D&D, but you can kind of apply this to really any OC that you're making. It's if you want to, you can choose if they are like lawful good, lawful neutral, lawful evil, neutral good, and then like chaotic, all of those things. For me, the first OC that I created for D&D, I did not know anything about D&D. I just like went on D&D Beyond and made some choices, and I was like, I'm gonna be an elf because, you know, basic. But I chose Paladin because I was like, I don't know, I like this like description, I guess, the best, but I didn't really know anything about any of the classes, which I'm really glad I picked Paladin because they're really fucking cool, and I have a lot of really cool stuff that I can do, and I've learned more over time. I've like been able to develop her personality, and I didn't really have that much of a backstory. I was just like, you're basic, like, she's out for adventure and she's never left her little forest before, kind of deal. And then the more that we played and the more I got into it and the more that I learned, it became, she's very much lawful good, but you know, surprise Paladin.
And a lawful good Paladin.
Yeah, but I was worried about, because Paladins, like, they have an oath to either a person or a thing, and I am not a religious person and never was, and so I was like, I don't think I can roleplay being like committed to any type of god. So I ended up picking Oath of the Ancients, which is more of like protecting the natural order of the world and all of that.
Such a good, it's my favorite.
Yeah, I love it a lot, except when I'm playing Baldur's Gate and I didn't realize that raising a corpse was breaking my oath. I also chose to save all of the vampire spawn. That was also breaking my oath, but I was like, it's so interesting because I'm like, narratively, that makes sense for the choice that I want to make for my character. Because I was playing, this was when I was playing as my OC. I don't think she would let all of those people die, but I guess in like canon, they're already dead. So keeping them alive is breaking your oath. So I just had to pay them. I had to pay like the scary knight guy that shows up like 1,000 gold, and I got my oath back. But that was, I think it's cool that like, despite these parameters that your character might have because of their race or class, you can also choose yourself to make like narrative choices that you believe the character would make.
Absolutely.
Even if it goes against what is like canon.
Mm-hmm. I just want to be a wheel of cheese.
You can be a wheel of cheese. Absolutely.
I saw that statistic. They posted the Baldur's Gate statistics, and I was like, what do you mean I can be a wheel of cheese? Is that an ending? Does that end the game if you become a wheel of cheese?
I haven't gotten it, but I think you can like turn yourself into a wheel of cheese at some point. Hold on.
Yeah, it's not permanent.
I think
I'm pretty sure it's like the polymorph spell that ends after a certain amount of time, but it is quite funny. But my second question, or Sawyer, I want you to, do you have OCs that you've made that you, because I know you said that you struggle more with
RPing
OC characters.
No, I have my shout out to Ahava because I have such strong feelings about her. No, Ahava was our Hannah and I had this Raylo baby that we made. Like, we were very much not into the whole, oh, they're gonna name her Padme or Leia or something. I was like, that's boring. So we scoured the internet. We used Google Translate to look at every word we could possibly think of. And like, Ahava means unconditional love in Hebrew, and we were like, that sounds sick. So we named her Ahava, and I thought that was, I actually honestly, like, I would name my kid that. I think it's a beautiful name. But yeah, we spent a lot of time on her, and then we ended up giving her a boyfriend character who's the son of Hux.
Period.
And we also gave Hux a husband named Amadeus.
Canon.
But yeah, so Will and Ahava are very dear to me, because we would write stories with them as well, and so I would say that. But I also really, really liked my Chiss Jedi character when I played SWTOR. I paid money to get the Chiss, like, you only can do Chiss for the Imperial agent, but if you pay money, you can get all the races for all the different classes, and so I picked Chiss for my Jedi Knight, and I really, really liked her. I thought she was cool. But yeah.
That brings me to my next question. Have you written fan fiction for your OCs, like, outside of playing, or made art about them, or had, like, commissioned people to make art for your characters?
I have drawn, like, little sketches of my characters. The closest thing that I got to writing fan fiction was I gave very detailed with my backstories. I usually will do, like, the basic, like, this is where I'm from, like, the very basics of my character, and then give that to my DM, and then I'll go into more detail for myself just because it helps me formulate kind of how I want to do it. So for my rogue, for Lev, I wrote, like, they had one of their former party members had been, he was like a prince, and he had walked away from the throne with an agreement with his family. Like, they basically were like, you can go off and do whatever, but if something happens to your brother, who is, like, first in line, they're like, you're next in line, we will come find you, and, like, you will have to go. But the likelihood of that was very low until one day his brother passed of, like, a random freak thing. And so I wrote about the night that he got taken back, and, like, my character's reaction and his reaction and, like, all of that. And then I also wrote, there was another one, like, the time that we picked up one of our party members. Like, I've only ever written backstory related fan fiction. Mm-hmm. I've never written, like, anything beyond that, but that helps me kind of formulate, okay, this is how my character would have reacted to certain things, and, like, you know, helps me kind of get into that mode of, like, okay, I know how my character is now, you know.
Mm-hmm. First of all, sick Last of Us Part 2 reference.
I was thinking the same thing.
I love Lev. And secondly, I am not someone who writes, like, extensive backstories for my characters. I found that the longer I play, the more I'm able to add to my backstory, because I feel like I have to find the character over time. But I have written, I have a hard time writing, like, full stories or full, like, fan fictions. So I started doing this thing with my character where I do, like, journal entries as if it's, like, her writing into her journal. And so I've done that before. And then my D&D party, our last campaign, we ended it a little bit early for extenuating circumstances that I will not get into here. But in order for us to, like, move on with all of our characters, one of my friends in our party wrote, like, a fan fiction-esque type thing to help, like, wrap everything up. And we all kind of put our own input into it of, like, where we wanted our characters to be by the end. So that was really cool. And I know, like, I have my one friend Alanis in our D&D party has like a 60 page backstory of her character. She goes hard, which is awesome. It's just, I can't do that.
No, I'm a Notion girly. I make Notions that have like little clickable links and like, that's my jam.
Yeah. For sure. Okay, real quick before I move into like the actual thing that I want to talk about, we have to talk about dice because we cannot talk about playing TTRPGs without talking about dice. I am someone who was like, I just need one set of dice. I just need one set of dice to play with and it'll be.
I said the same thing.
I think that's how it always starts. And then I got a set as a gift. And then I was at a convention and they had mystery sets and I am a slut for a mystery box. So I bought the mystery set of dice and yep. I've gotten more as gifts. And I bought two sets for the sole purpose of turning the D20s into earrings. And now I'm a dice goblin, certified dice goblin.
I literally have the bag of folding from Critical Role Shop. And it is amazing. Just full. You can't see them, but there's so many in here. I have so many sets. I terrify myself sometimes. Yeah, I love dice. I pulled out my favorite earlier because I was like, my little. And then I have metal.
Ooh, pretty.
And then I have this one. This one has a rose inside of it. And the 20 is a rose.
Love.
I just love dice.
There are so many different types of dice now, though. There's like your resin dice, your plastic dice,
liquid core,
your metal. And I don't care what people say. Oh, if you get XYZ, it's not going to be balanced. I don't care. They're pretty.
I have a good time when I use them, and that's what matters.
Yeah, it's a nice little surprise every single time, you know, whatever number I get. But I love my dice. They're just like little candy. I just want to eat them. Just, you know, they're just like, yeah, they're like little candies.
You can like crunch on them. They're a little crunchy, you know. I think they're like perfect food size.
Yeah. Once you start, you can't stop. I only have
one
them.
Set, and I'm gonna stick with the one set because I don't.
No, we're gonna get you more
because I'm not even in a campaign. So why would I need?
I had three sets before I even started playing. So we're gonna get you more. It's gonna happen.
Well, you have to have a set for each character, mm-hmm. and then a backup set in case you have to send your dice to dice jail,
mm-hmm.
and.
A set that you can take with you when you travel.
A travel set, exactly. I do love thinking of the Critical Role sets. I have the Pike.
I have the Keyleth set.
I have the Pike set and the my boyfriend got me the Keyleth set. I love these little bags. They're like perfect little travel size.
I have my Keyleth dice. Where's the 20?
It's a little deer. It's little antlers. They're so cute.
The white one that I showed earlier is from the white stone set that they have. So this is, ooh, it has their little logo right there.
That's cool. Love that. Well, that brings us to our next little section. I wanted to talk about the popularity of D&D, but TTRPGs in general, and how I think that they've had a little bit of a renaissance and become so much more mainstream within the last, I would say, 10 years, but especially the last 5 or 6 with Stranger Things, the show being including Dungeons and Dragons as a thing that the characters play, and then actual plays, which are you watch people as they play. Yeah. But yeah, have you all watched actual plays? How many? Which ones? What do you like?
I watch so many. I watch all of them. So like I said earlier, I got my start into Critical Role right when they started, almost 10 years ago now, which is insane. And then since then I started watching a lot more. I watch Dimension 20 also pretty consistently because their seasons are, I always recommend listeners, if you have ever watched any actual play or listened to anything, I always highly recommend Dimension 20 on Dropout. Dropout TV is the best subscription you will ever buy in your life. But they are really easy to consume. Their episodes are 2 hours, sometimes three, but mostly 2 hours, if not less. Super easy to follow. Very, like, first-time friendly, while Critical Role is a lot more lore-heavy and long. Dimension 20 is much easier to consume. And so I think that if you're looking for somewhere to start and you want, like, longer form, I would recommend those. But I think that actual plays have really opened the door for, like, more people to be able to experience D&D even if they don't want to play. And I think that it's really cool to watch, like, all of these voice actors and stuff get really into it as well. Like, a lot of them have brought their home games online or, like, will come and guest star on different shows. Like, the official Dungeons & Dragons, like, Wizards of the Coast just did a actual play at Gen Con, and they had Abria Iyengar, who was the DM, who's a phenomenal DM. But then they also had, like, Neil Newbin and Julie. Like, they had all of these, Brennan, they had all of these people that have either been in video games or in the TTRPG space come and play D&D. And I think that was so fun.
It really is. I just really got into watching actual plays this year. I have not watched Dimension 20, but I have heard that it is a little bit more consumable for people that want to start getting into watching because they are shorter, like you said. And they also are, like, unique and got, like, they have, like, different settings. It's not all Faerun or Faerun adjacent, like the D&D world, because Critical Role is so far they've solely been, their main campaigns have been Dungeons & Dragons and 5e. And their episodes, because they've been playing for so long, they started out live streaming. All of their episodes are like 4 to 5 hours long each. Listen to them on 1.5 speed, sometimes 2x speed. But yeah, I think I love that it's made it more accessible to so many people who otherwise would not know, because a lot of people really want to play or they're really interested in it, but they might not have a friend group or a group of people that they can play with. So watching other people play in an actual play is sort of a way to get the kind of, like, fix that you're looking for, but also the communities surrounding these actual plays are also amazing. Like, I myself am working on a couple of different Critical Role cosplays that I'm gonna wear hopefully at New York Comic Con and other places. But so that's also a great place to meet other people.
100%
to then play with.
We met when we went to SuperCon. SuperCon had mostly Critical Role because it, like, and Julie was there, Robbie was there, but the entire cast of Critical Role was there, which doesn't happen very often, at least, like, in the week of COVID. And so we met so many people that had either, like, flown in or just come, like, from Florida to come and meet them. And we made so many new friendships and, like, relationships with people because of Critical Role and D&D. And, like, everyone that we met was, like, either they had never played D&D but, like, loved watching it, or they got into D&D because of actual play. And so it was just so fun to get to talk to everyone and be like, oh, this community is insanely big. And, like, even if they didn't know, like, some of them only knew some of the cast from, like, other shows that they had guested on for TTRPGs. And, like, it's just, the community is vast and wide, and it's really cool to see.
And then you have things like Vox Machina, which I think have gotten people into at least the concept, because people are like, oh, what is this show? And then you find out that it's Critical Role. And 100%. I have not watched any actual plays, but yeah, I didn't even think about that, probably because I'm not in this world as much, but I guess it feels like it's cool to play TTRPG. It was always cool, but you know what I mean? Like,
no, it's definitely become more, I think, to your point, like, Vox Machina has really opened that door. And that was the thing that I was so excited about, because I've been in the fandom since the Kickstarter happened. Like, if you didn't know, that was the craziest thing ever. Critical Role did a Kickstarter where they basically were like, we want to raise I think the goal was 75 or no, $750,000 over the course of like a month and a half. They had a month and a half to get it. They were like, we're going to raise $750,000 to do a one episode, 15 minute animated thing. They raised $1 million in less than a day. And everyone was like, then they raised over $10 million over the course of that Kickstarter, and it got picked up by Amazon. And I remember telling my friend that I like knew because of Critical Role that I was like, this is going to bring it to a mainstream audience that has never experienced D&D. And when they go and try to figure out where the story came from, they're going to be like, oh, maybe I can enjoy this. And I think that that has opened up a whole new world of like opportunity. And I think it also shows just how important collaborative storytelling is and how you can get some of the best stories and the best like things just by sitting around a table and rolling some dice, because everything that Vox Machina is came from that table and came from those episodes. And like, I just think that's so cool. That's so cool to be able to look at that and go, that came from this. Like,
it brings me like so much joy. I'm sure all of the Critical Role cast are like, just, they always talk about, they're just blown away by the support that they receive. But it's like a testament to how great they are at storytelling and just how much people connect with not only the characters that they play, but just them as people. Because I've heard from everybody that they're all just actually so nice and gracious about the whole community, which the community in general, from my experience, has been overwhelmingly positive, which I think is kind of rare in a lot of communities in fandom. You know, you're always going to have your bad apples or whatever, but like, I have not had seen, you know, had really a bad experience involved in it. And to Vox Machina, I watched the show and then was like, well, I don't want to wait for the next season. So then I figured out through like Reddit threads what episode of Critical Role I had to start on to like start where it left off, because it's not a one to one. The show is not a one to one of the campaign. But it is a very nice, it's a very nice summary of what happens in like the first 60 something episodes. So from there I started watching it, and I'm also like, I am a huge voice actor fan. I would go so far to say it might be one of my special interests, because anytime I'm watching something, I'm like, hey, that guy was the voice of that guy. Or like, we were watching The Bad Batch when season 3 was airing, and I just go, that's Liam O'Brien.
100%. Literally, I did the same. When I met him, I said, Liam, I was like in tears already crying, and I was like, Liam, I loved you because of Critical Role, but I was like, but I also really loved you in The Bad Batch.
And he plays like Empire Soldier number like 4, like no name, but I knew as soon as I heard the voice, like, that's Liam.
He's in season 1 and 2 as well.
Yeah. Ashley Johnson is baby girl. I love her so much. I love Laura Bailey. And so that was also another factor in me wanting to watch Critical Role. But same with like Dimension 20. I feel like Brendan Lee Mulligan is one of the funniest people I've ever seen. And he seems so like down to earth, and wonderful. Like, he's someone you can like get a drink with, you know, just like meet at the bar.
And I think one of the strengths, and it actually kind of goes into where the outline is heading, I think one of the strengths of Dimension 20 that they had right out the gate was that their representation was so like evident from the beginning. And it was, they, Dropout specifically, has spent so much time curating a cast of people who are like one of the most diverse casts I've seen online. And they constantly pride themselves on doing that, like in every project that they do. And I think that Critical Role also, like, I think Critical Role is a different beast in terms of like, it started with a group of friends, and they since have worked really hard to find ways to include other people and to include more representation, which I also think is very, like, people like to boil it down to, well, it's just a bunch of white people playing D&D. And I'm like, it started, you have to look at its origin and look at what they're doing now to change that narrative and like uplift other voices. And I think that that's the other thing that like TTRPGs and this space do so well, is that there's so many opportunities to tell so many stories, and like, you can be anyone you want to be. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You can choose your narrative. You get to choose your backstory. You get to choose the kind of character you are. And I think that as someone who grew up in a space where I had to be closeted, like these kind of spaces, like tabletop games, were really influential in like me being able to be more authentically me, because I was able to play that on at the table, which mm-hmm. was really cool. And so
I know when we usually have, if you're new to Yap Sesh, we invite our guests to suggest a topic or bring a topic that they really want to talk about. And I was super excited when you said TTRPGs, because I'm like in. But you specifically wanted to talk about the representation factor and how there are so many, like, I guess I think the idea of D&D used to be like, oh, just like a bunch of white dudes that are nerds like playing in their basement, and it's become so much more than that. And I mm-hmm. love hearing stories that I see so many people are able to like discover themselves through being at the table and playing the characters that they play, from like discovering, testing out, you know, I'm gonna make this character and this is what their pronouns are going to be. And it's mm-hmm. it's helped people discover, oh, maybe I like being non-binary. That's crazy.
Literally in a way, first character.
Yeah, like in a way that you might not discover just organically in real life. So 100%. I love that. I think that happened on Dimension 20, didn't it?
Yeah, Allie Beardsley is a great example of that. They played a character that was very in like a very toxic religious situation, which they had grown up in. And they talked about how they didn't really care about D&D. They had gotten asked to do it and they were kind of like indifferent about it. But over the course of playing Kristen in season one and then playing their other characters throughout the rest of the seasons and campaigns that they've done, it really helped them discover who they are, and like it made them more comfortable with taking testosterone and like exploring those different things, because one, they were in an environment that was so welcoming. That's the other thing, is that tabletops really, those people are like your best friends. You spend so much time with them. You get so close with them, even though it's through a game, you're still creating that bond and that relationship. And so because of that, they were able to be more comfortable being more authentic in their own skin. And I think that that's the other strength that they have, is that you're creating those bonds and getting more comfortable, and you learn a lot of things about yourself and are able to like twist that and put it into real life. And I think that that's like the best part. And it goes into role-playing. Like, I'm sure Sawyer has experienced, like, with role-playing, you learn a lot about yourself and how you interact with other people.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even think about it until I started writing OSHA recently. And I try really hard to stay as accurate as possible to the characters that I'm portraying, whether, you know, whatever, because I only write canon characters, and I try to make sure that, like, when it's Rey, like, okay, I think Rey would do this XYZ, but I have seen so much of myself and, like, my experience with autism in OSHA, and that's a little bit new for me, because I was, like, you know, because I don't perceive Rey to be that way or anything else, or Rhaenyra or any of the other characters that I write, like, but, yeah, for sure. Like, I find myself, and especially the longer that I roleplay, because I've been doing it for 10 years now, like, the longer that I do it, the more I realize I learn about myself as I interpret how these characters would interact in their, within the context of their own world, so.
100%.
Yeah, and the nice part is, when you're making your own character, too, like, I think we all have headcanons about the fictional characters that we like and will imprint some version of ourselves onto those characters, which is why we feel so connected to them. But the nice thing I think about an OC is that you are creating the canon for this character, and you can make them whatever you want them to be, and hopefully 100%. You are playing with a group of people that are also have similar ideas or similar philosophies about those things. And even luckier, or even better, if you have a DM or a GM that sets your characters up to succeed and is very welcoming of a table. I think something that is always really important when you are starting out, if you're GMing or if you're playing at a table, is that your GM can listen and will make sure to ask players about what they're comfortable with, where they want to see their character go, what their boundaries are, what their triggers are. And it seems, you know, like on surface level arbitrary, because it's like, well, this is all fictional and it's made up, but it's so much more than that. And I'm someone who, both as a person and then when I'm playing an OC, I like to have a lot of autonomy over my character. And obviously, like, the dice are eventually, like, the dice decides, you know, which way that a story goes. But if I, you know, if God forbid one of my OCs were to ever die, I would still want to have some sort of autonomy over their death, you know? Yeah. And I think a good DM will be able to facilitate that for you, you know?
Absolutely. And I think that that's another thing that tabletop RPGs present, is like, it's an opportunity to explore stories that you wouldn't get to explore in real life. And then also creating that environment of like, yes, these are things that I might not be comfortable with, but like, here's how we can explore that in a way that's safe, mm-hmm. and in a way that like, is comfortable for everyone. And I think that that's another strength that they have, is that you get to sometimes touch on really difficult topics, but in a space where you know that you're not going to get hurt because you're with people that like understand you and understand how you operate. And even though it's fiction, there still is like that level of realism. And like, I don't know, I feel like D&D has helped me process a lot of things. Like, I dealt with a lot of death in my friends and family last year, and my character dealt with that as well. And so it was kind of like a dual, like, I was dealing with it in real life, but being able to process it in D&D, which I know sounds really silly, but like, it really did help me, because I was able to accurately be like, this is what my character's going through, but it's the same thing that I'm going through. So like, this is how my character would deal with it, so this is how I can deal with it. And it's crazy how that can happen and how that can help you, you know? So.
Yeah. Fiction is like a beautiful way to process trauma. And I maintain that for sure.
I agree.
We could end with some rapid fire though.
I love rapid fire.
We can do some rapid fire. I gotta think of some rapid fire. Okay, wait, rapid fire. Oh, can see it in real time.
You could start with ask, you know, like, what's your favorite race to make a character for in D&D?
Tiefling is my favorite, 1000%.
Do you have a favorite class?
Favorite class I've played is Paladin, for sure. All of it is just so fun. But favorite in general, I'm biased. My first character was a cleric. I have to say cleric. They're so fun.
Do you prefer to be player or GM or both or either?
I feel like I definitely switch between the two. I used to prefer player, but now that I'm much more comfortable as a DM, I'm definitely like more okay with being in that middle of like, I'll do either. Whatever people need.
Not D&D related. But relevant to your current experience, who presently is your favorite High Republic character?
Oh my god. So for those who are listening, I'm reading through the High Republic right now. I'm on the first phase. I'm actually almost done. I had to pause Midnight Horizons because I've been so busy. My favorite character? Oh no. I think, okay, I just edited my reaction to what happens to Leox in Fallen Star. And I think Leox is probably my favorite just because he's so funny. If we're talking non-Jedi, it's definitely him. If we're talking Jedi, Stellan's my favorite. I love Stellan so much. I love him so much. He's just my little baby boy. Nothing bad will ever happen to him, right?
Never, ever, ever.
Never.
Never, ever. Do you have fave critical role characters? You can pick like one from each campaign so or whatever you want.
In general, it's actually not from the main campaign. My favorite character ever is Abria's character in Calamity. She played a wizard that's just the like most perfect everything. So that's my favorite character ever. And then campaign one, Vax. I have his top figure over there. Campaign two, I would either say Ford or Caleb, which I have Art of Caleb over here. Mm-hmm. And then campaign three, I would say Laudna, because her journey I really resonate with. So, and then for Downfall, because that just happened, Laura played the Raven Queen, and that was my favorite thing that's ever happened ever.
I've seen clips, and I'm like, ooh, I can't wait to get to that.
So good.
I love Liam O'Brien. He's like probably my favorite RPer on the Critical. I love, because he always plays like emo boys, but when I met him, so well.
He was probably my favorite interaction. I had wonderful interactions with the entire cast, but he was my favorite because when I went up to his table, immediately started crying because he's like my favorite out of the whole group. And I was like embarrassed. I was like, I'm so sorry. And then after I like gave him my whole spiel, gave him his art, he goes, are you accepting hugs? And I was like, yes. And he gave me a hug, and I was like, this is what I needed. This is exactly what I needed. It was wonderful.
He honestly, like, just watching campaign one, I already liked Vax from Vox Machina, but just the way that he plays, and I can't wait to see what they do with the show. It's just so, it's so good. Brings me so much joy.
Love it.
Yeah, I'm excited to get to campaign three. I'm only on like episode 19 of campaign two, and I'm already like, I want to watch three. But
so good.
Yeah. Cool. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation.
I know. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Yes.
Thanks so for being here.
Always.
I feel a little bad that I had not a lot to contribute to the conversation. But
no, but I feel like what you did contribute was very good and insightful, especially because I only have RP experience with D&D and tabletop. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to hear that kind of other side and like how similar it all is. It really is also like,
I think it is.
Yeah. Ways. It's really cool.
Yes. And we are going to play soon, hopefully. So we'll have to make a follow-up episode and
yes,
talk about it more. But yeah, stay tuned for future Yapsesh D&D. Thank you so much, Megs, for being here. Can you please let the people know where they can find you?
Absolutely. So Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. I am Megalorian. It's right here. It has a little I because my actual name has an I next to the G. So stole that. I'm pretty much everywhere. I talk a lot on Twitter. I'm a yapper, as you can tell. So please enjoy that. I post a lot of Disney Parks content and like a lot of fandom content. So that's mostly what you'll see from me if you follow me. But yeah.
And check out their blog.
Oh yeah. I also have a blog. I keep forgetting about that. It's called Meg's Odyssey. It's my odyssey around the galaxy, trying to meet different people, different perspectives, giving updates on different fandom things. It's going to be kind of my catch-all. It has my gallery too. So photos and everything. So if you want to check that out, just megsodyssey.com.
Yeah, and we'll link all of their socials and links and all of those good things in the description of the episode. But yeah, this has been riveting. That sounded sarcastic, but it's not. I'm tired. But anyway, thanks all for listening. Thanks for watching if you're on the YouTubes, and we will yap with y'all again soon.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Sayonara. Ha ha!